The views and opinions expressed on the Ripley 304 podcast are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of the City of Ripley or any other agency or organization.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Ripley 304 podcast. I'm your host, John McGinley. In this episode, I will be speaking with West Virginia State Senate President Mitch Carmichael. We'll recap the last legislative session, and we'll talk about the COVID-19 virus. So thanks for listening, and let's get started. I'm speaking with Senate President Mitch Carmichael here in his office at the State Capitol. Mitch, it's a beautiful day today. I see they're mowing outside, which is a great sign.
Oh, they do keep the lawn nice here at the Capitol, so it is a good sign. Spring's on the way.
So, Senator, I want to talk to you about the legislative session and then, of course, the COVID-19 situation. But first, we're just going to get a background on you. I know your mom and dad are from Jackson County, and your dad was in the state legislature. So is that how you got started here?
Yeah, I've always had an interest in public service, and I think it was instilled in me from an early age from my father being involved in public interest groups. And he was actually appointed to the legislature probably in the mid-60s by then Governor Arch Moore. So I really became interested in public service, and I've been blessed to be, to be in this capacity now as Senate President.
So what was your stepping stones up to the position you're at now?
Well, my background's all private sector, industry, technology, computer systems, and so broadband delivery and all of that. So then, just as an interest in trying to serve the public, got involved with running for the House of Delegates and served in the House of Delegates for a few years, and then was elected to the State Senate, and then 4 years ago, was elected Senate President.
So you presided over the state legislature on the Senate behalf this past session. So what are some of the accomplishments that occurred during this past session?
Well, during the past legislative session, we have really focused, and it's ironic that it came to be this way, but on public health issues. And so many of the things that we did in the legislative session, we look back on that session and then projected as we enter into this COVID-19 pandemic. So, but when we look back and we thought foster care, it was a real emphasis of mine and others in the Senate to ensure that the 7,000 children we have in foster care in West Virginia have the very best resources and system in place to help them transition through this, what could be described as a difficult life circumstances, being in foster care, and give them every advantage we can to provide the foster children, the foster parents, and the entire system with more funding, with better judicial climate, with Bill of Rights that make sure that we're taking care of these children and their parents in the right way. So we put a lot of emphasis on that. Also, as it relates to drug transparency pricing, we realized that, in fact, the AARP and many other organizations were very involved in making sure that we had a transparency website that enabled all drug prices to be published there. And if a drug manufacturer increases the price over a certain percentage, it must appear and it must be notified to the public. Then thirdly, we did the co-pays for insulin. And we recognize how important those who are diabetic and have to take insulin to survive. Many times the price of that insulin treatment has been going escalating and escalating and escalating. So we capped legislatively the price of that drug such that your copay for your insurance could be no more than $100 for a 30-day supply. And this will help those who are on insulin to be able to manage their disease and manage their treatment and ensure that they have affordable drugs. And then we really put in place some great pathways for nursing programs. We realize there's a shortage of nurses in West Virginia. Many of our beds go, our hospital beds are unfilled because of lack of nurses. So we put in place training that one that aspires to be a nurse, and perhaps in high school, can get some training that those credits will be able to transfer to an associate or a bachelor's degree very quickly, so that someone could enter into that profession much more quickly than they could previously. So lots of things with healthcare.
I know you've promoted a lot of technical fields in the legislature. West Virginia is obviously blue-collar, hardworking people. So what are some of the advantages that the technical college have now, and what have you all done to address that?
Yeah, we realize that many of the careers and the jobs that are available in West Virginia are career and technical fields. For instance, the skills and the trades and the crafts, welding, plumbing, electrical, all the things that are associated with building products in West Virginia. So last year, it was my lead sponsored bill, Senate Bill 1, was for providing incentives for those who want to enter the crafts and the trades to remove the financial impediment for obtaining those degrees and certifications. And it's been an incredible success, one of the most successful pieces of legislation that's passed around here for decades. Just since its implementation, already 5,000 people have applied for what's called the West Virginia Invest program. And we've determined that over 2,500 of those didn't require a penny of state assistance. We pulled down all this federal money, and then the ones that did require assistance, we put some constraints around the programs. In other words, you have to be drug tested, you have to agree to community service hours, and you have to live and work in West Virginia for a period of 2 years upon graduation. Or you pay the loan back. It becomes a loan and you have to pay it back. So people are entering trades, fields, skills that can provide them great opportunities for a career in West Virginia because of this program.
So has there been people taking advantage of this?
Oh, yes. As I mentioned, over just since June 30th when the program went into effect, 5,000 West Virginians have already taken advantage of this program. And our enrollment in our community and technical college system is up over 12%. So it's been an incredibly successful program. And we'll see we're a leader in this in terms of states. We're one of, at the forefront of the nation. So we've gotten a lot of accolades for this program and look forward to seeing it benefit the citizens of West Virginia.
So another bill that was brought up was assistance for the volunteer fire department recruiting. Recruiting is down in West Virginia and all over the country. And of course, West Virginia is huge in volunteers. We reach out and help people all the time. But there is a lack of volunteer firefighters and volunteer EMS folks. So how have you all addressed that this year?
Yeah, we continue to struggle with this problem. We look at giving tax benefits for those who are willing to volunteer their services for income that they otherwise would earn, tax benefits for that. We look at, and we put a lot of emphasis on the workers' compensation system as it relates to fire departments, volunteer fire departments, and so forth. And we continue to try to find ways to incentivize people to volunteer for those programs. We look at different funding streams to help volunteer fire departments. We provide them audit assistance for their financial obligations that each one of these volunteer fire departments are vested with. So it's a big concern for the state legislature, and recognizing that without these volunteer fire departments, our insurance rates would be sky high. The EMS people do such great work. There are some bills that percolated through the system this year that didn't get quite across the finish line. For instance, utilizing first responders and calculating those people with PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. So those bills didn't make it across the finish line, but we're going to continue to look at those type options.
So the financial part of it, and also the PTSD, that will be brought again?
Oh, I'm sure we'll continue to study that to make sure that we don't put, you know, as we look at, we don't want to, many of these issues, when you push in one area, something else pops out in another area. So we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our volunteer fire departments, as well as our professional firefighters and EMS.
So another item to come up, and I think you were the sponsor about the intermediate courts. Mm-hmm. And what can you tell us about that, and what's the progress on that?
It's so funny to watch the evolution of that discussion with intermediate appellate courts. And it's so funny that typically the trial lawyers that scream the loudest about having someone review the circuit court decisions. So it's comical, really, to listen to the wailing and screaming that West Virginia should not have an intermediate appellate court. And all this wailing and screaming is done by trial lawyers who are advantaged by the system as it currently exists. West Virginia is one of only a very few states in America that does not have an intermediate court of appeals. Now, I'll say to everyone, if we're performing economically at the top level in the nation, and that our judicial system is viewed nationwide as the pristine and a paradigm of integrity, then we shouldn't do anything about it. But when we're last, near last, in many of these markers, we should make some changes to the system. We should have an intermediate appeal. Court of Appeals. We're the largest state in America that does not have one.
So what are the advantages of having one?
You have a right to appeal. In West Virginia, you have no automatic right to appeal an adverse ruling in a circuit court. So whether you're a business or whether you're up on a criminal charge, you have no right to appeal a bad decision. Now, our West Virginia Supreme Court, thank goodness, has done some things to make it better since we've made some changes in the court. They have issued a Supreme Court rule that says there will be an appeal. We will review every case. It's just a rule. It can be changed overnight. It's not a court that will review the decision. And this court, an intermediate appellate court we would put in place, would be very reasonably priced, and it's essential for the proper adjudication of our cases. And so it just frustrates me that we're willing to take a poor judicial system and listen to the trial lawyers who say, hey, we shouldn't have an intermediate appellate court.
So I've heard you bring it up in the past how this would help businesses come mm-hmm. to West Virginia. Can you explain that?
Yeah. People don't realize big business, big manufacturing companies, big entities that hire thousands of people and create downstream jobs and so forth, have a check marks that they look at when they go around the nation to say, where would we want to locate? These site selection people, and they're very important in the process. We've made a lot of changes in our state to make sure that we're on those lists. But one very critical item that we do not have is an intermediate court of appeals. So a big business, are you going to locate your business in a southern West Virginia, in, let's say, Wyoming County or McDowell County, and you have an adverse ruling from a circuit judge and you have no right to appeal it? No, a big business is not going to do that. So it's very important for the employment status of our citizens. We deserve the right to compete for these jobs, and we're being withheld from the right to compete for them because we do not have an intermediate court of appeal.
So it sounds like you're very passionate about this. I'm sure there will be come up in the next legislature.
Oh, yeah. We've passed it in the state Senate on multiple occasions. We've pushed it through, and the governor called for it as well, and the House of Delegates could not come through with it.
Well, speaking of business, you representing Jackson County and Putnam also, Century Aluminum, the shutdown smelter in Jackson County. What's the status on that and getting business there?
Well, the property was, let me just go back to the history of Kaiser Aluminum real quick. You know, and my family history is all involved in that project. My father was a union worker there in local 5668. And first chairman of the grievance committee. So I'm well steeped in the tradition and how important those manufacturing jobs are in our county. So I grew up on those wages and just very proud of that. Now, the property, as we all know, aluminum smelting in America has been in vast decline. You know, at one time there were so many smelters. Now there's only, you know, maybe less than, I'm sure there's less than 10 in North America. But so that plant closed. It was sold to some investors who then defaulted on the loan most recently. And so the state of West Virginia took a mortgage basically on that property, and now we own the property. So it now provides, if one's looking at it optimistically, opportunity for reinvestment, redeployment, and it's the best manufacturing business development site in West Virginia, in my opinion, and in, frankly, in the opinion of the Commerce Department. It has rail, river, dock, flat land,
interstate nearby,
four-lane access to the interstate, essentially. So it is an incredible asset for our county and for our state that I'm positive will be developed.
So with that being said, do you know of any businesses that are looking at that area?
Yeah, I know businesses that are. The Commerce Department has been in and talked to me about several different opportunities, and I can't disclose those because they're essentially private information at this point. But there is so much interest in that site.
So it's, like you said, it's a great site, and it would be a huge boost to Jackson County, but not only Jackson County, the state of West Virginia.
Yeah, the region.
It's such a large area.
Yeah, the entire region would benefit.
So the last session, or the one before that, medical cannabis come up, and it was passed, and then you had another bill to extend maybe some other uses for that. Can you touch on that?
Well, first, I'll touch on the medical cannabis. It's a very controversial issue, although I don't understand why. It for those, and the way the bill is written, for those who are suffering from various diseases, and it's been observed that medical cannabis can alleviate some of that suffering. Who are we to say no? You can't have this that's going to alleviate your suffering and make your life a little better. So I'm certainly not going to be one to stand in the way of alleviating someone's suffering. So we passed medical cannabis. Now, as you know, the feds have not, still, the federal government does not recognize medical cannabis as a legal drug. And therefore, that creates all kinds of problems for the states that want to implement a program. And West Virginia is experiencing those problems. The last legislative session, we continued to try to find ways to accommodate, A, those federal concerns, and B, those who just don't want it. So we, again, passed in the Senate a bill that would have more quickly realized the advantages of medical cannabis in our state, but the House didn't take it up.
So in my opinion, I mean, medical cannabis, there's a difference between cannabis and marijuana. People associate that, and of course, marijuana's got a huge stigma, which is hindering making this controversial. Take, for instance, morphine and codeine. Morphine is made from opiates, poppy. And, you know, that's just as bad or worse than marijuana. So, you know, it's got a bad name, but it's still out there and legal and federally okayed. But the stigma that medical marijuana and cannabis has, I think it's what's hurting this. And the list of people that can, different patients that this can help, I know every West Virginia person knows at least one person, if not more than that, that can benefit from this. So I don't understand, what do you think is with the federal government that's hampering it?
Well, I think there are some, first, let me just say, that was very well said. What you just articulated was very well said, and I agree, which is the reason we passed medical cannabis in West Virginia. But there is a group of people that dogmatically react to the use of any type of drug that is currently has a stigma about it, like you say. So there is, just that undercurrent of concern, I think, and then just irrational concern, I think. And but at the end of the day, I think eventually we'll get there. And I use as a barometer some of the older folks that I'm familiar with. Like my mother's a good example, and some of her friends at church, and just they say, look, if it can help somebody lead a better life, alleviate the the problems that people have, or cancer patients have with appetite and eating and so forth, and just other type things, then who are we to say that you can't have it? So I think eventually the more compassionate, rational minds will prevail, and we'll, people will be able to
utilize. I believe education and information is the key to this, like anything else, but this is so controversial, and people need to study it and take the time to learn about it, in my opinion.
Yes.
So, Senator Carmichael, we'll take a break, and then we'll get back to you, and we'll talk about the COVID-19 situation.
Okay.
Hey, folks. If you have any questions, comments, or even ideas for the Ripley 304 podcast, drop me a line at the email address ripley304podcast@gmail.com or call me at 304-250-9083. Thanks for listening. And I ask you to share the Ripley 304 podcast with your friends and family. I'm back with Senate President Carmichael. Senator, there's the nation's in some troubling times right now with the COVID-19 outbreak, as much as the world. So what's the status here in West Virginia? I heard this morning that there's been some tests, and we do have one positive person in the Eastern Panhandle. So how are the tests being conducted here in West Virginia in the smaller communities?
Well, the testing is obviously a great issue of concern. There's not nearly enough testing being conducted, and it's obvious that it should be clear to everyone that we have more cases than one in West Virginia. But the testing has not been, not just here in West Virginia, but throughout the nation, has not been, as widely available. But we'll get those issues corrected. We're ramping it up, and it's from a legislative perspective, there's very little we can do. But from an executive branch, at both the federal and the state level, there's much that can be done. And so we'll allocate any funding, we'll take any measure that we need to in the state Senate to react. But at some point, we rely on the executive branch to implement the policies and utilize the funds that we bring forth.
So I want to let our listeners know this is a fluid situation. This podcast is being recorded on Wednesday morning, the 18th. So that just gives you a perspective of what's happening right now. Like I said, West Virginia's got one case. On Monday, President Trump praised Governor Justice because at that time we did not have any cases in West Virginia, but we all knew that there were some. And the president suggested we may not need federal aid, but hopefully he's changed his mind. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think what the president was saying, who I have enormous respect for, what he was saying is that, West Virginia has been blessed to this point in not having a great number of cases. And I don't think it's the result of any action the governor's taken or anything like that. It's just A, there's not been as much testing conducted, and B, we have a relatively less mobile society in West Virginia, where many of the other states have a lot more international travel and so forth. So we've had some blessings as a result of that, but we're clearly going to need federal aid. I mean, the economy in West Virginia will be markedly affected because of this because of the reaction to the COVID-19 virus. And so, many of the businesses that are being shuttered currently and the transitions and the changes that are being made will have an effect on our economy that must be, we must receive some federal aid for that.
So this morning, regarding federal aid, the House has passed a $1 trillion economic package, and it's going to the Senate. Also involved in that was a check coming out, a stimulus check to the individuals, the American people. Do you know any more information on that or have an opinion on that?
Well, we participate in the updates from the vice president's staff. So we're tuned into that. The phase that is going on today in this U.S. Senate is phase one, really, from the House's $1 trillion package. But there'll be additional as much as $1 trillion allocated for this response and more if we need it. So I don't think this is a time to be stingy, to be parsimonious in any way. We need to do what is necessary to continue to get the economy back on track, because frankly, I mean, there can be as many people affected by the economic impact of this virus as there will be from the health virus and or from the health concerns. So we have to attack it on all fronts. And clearly, we have to protect the public from the spread of this, alleviate the spread of it, because it's going to spread. But let's thoughtfully, prayerfully, prudently approach our response to this issue, and don't let fear so much guide our actions as science should.
So we have local businesses, restaurants here in the Ripley area that are going to be affected by this. And of course, we'd like people to still go to those businesses. They do fast or carry out, and they do also, you can go in and pick it up. What do you say to the folks that are, struggling with that?
From the business perspective, hang on. Don't give up. Try to adapt and change to these changing circumstances. Utilize, for instance, from a restaurant perspective, utilize, pick up curb services from the retailers and so forth. Try to just maintain the best hygiene and cleaning procedures as possible, and reinstill in the public the confidence that the local businesses can fulfill the needs and services of our local community as well or better than any national firm, and having things shipped in and so forth. We need to rally around our local businesses and support them, and that I don't exclude Walmart from that. I mean, Walmart's a great big part of our community, and people utilize those that service as well. So we're going to get through this. I mean, people are reacting in such a pronounced manner, and it is so important to be cautious and prudent. But we're going to get through this, and for the businesses to hang on, there'll be state aid, there'll be federal aid to get them through this, and just hang in there, and this will turn out okay.
And we need to come together as a nation, as a community, and as neighbors. I heard on Metro News this morning on the way to work that the Ripley postal deliveries, the people there that give the mail in around Ripley, they're putting notes in people's mailboxes, especially the elderly, say, hey, if you need anything, you need us to get you groceries, we'll do it for you.
Yeah.
And that's just fantastic. They're going to do that on their own time. So that's what we need right now.
Yeah, it is, and any one of us can volunteer in those in that arena. So it's important to make sure that our people that are most at risk and most vulnerable for this proliferation of this virus can are accommodated in the best ways.
So yesterday, the governor announced that the restaurants, casinos, and other places will be shut down. Do you have a time frame when this may be lifted?
Well, the speculation is 2 weeks, and because the incubation period for this virus is 14 days, and so I've just make sure people use good common sense, and I've observed people that aren't. That just a couple of days ago, before they were shut down, people were congregating bar, even though they knew they shouldn't, but they still did, and I think that's selfish. I think we need to, adhere to the professional, not the politicians, the professional healthcare advice. You're going to see politicians from various sides of the aisle and all different points of view trying to make this a political issue. And that is the very last thing we need, is to somehow stigmatize this virus and associate it with either political party or a political agenda or anything like that. This is about health and economic vitality of our country and our state and our community. So let's rely on the healthcare professionals.
So there's all kinds of information at the cdc.gov website. But the common things are, I mean, we take advantage of it. We don't think about it. But this will make a difference. Hand washing, social distancing, covering your mouth, sneezing with a tissue, then throw it away. Simple things like that. That doesn't seem like it'll make a difference, but it makes a huge difference in things like this.
Sure it does. And that was what the president's message initially is. As this virus takes hold worldwide and very few cases in America at that point, when he was saying, let's just use common sense, wash our hands, be careful, social distance, those type things. And then as the disease or as the virus continues to proliferate, we take the next steps and the next steps. And so we're doing this transition to full-scale response from an economic and a public health benefit perspective. And, somebody's always going to say we should have done it quicker or better or higher or more and all that kind of thing. And that's just partisan political hangering. We should come together as a nation, state, and community to listen to our healthcare professionals.
In my opinion, I mean, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much the federal government can do. There's only so much that you can ward off Mother Nature. But that's when people need to come together and help each other. And the folks in West Virginia always do that. And we've been through times where it's affected us more directly. And this may get worse, but I'm sure you trust the folks of West Virginia to do and help each other like we always do.
Absolutely. We're recognized internationally for helping one another and how great we are as a community. Now, in this case, when you say come together as a community, we can help one another and those are in special needs, but we also need to, practice the social distancing as well. So,
well, Senator Carmichael, I appreciate you hosting me here today and I appreciate all the information. And fine folks of West Virginia, we'll get through this along with the rest of the nation.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to have you here and come back anytime.
All right, thank you, sir. This concludes this episode of Ripley 304 Podcast. Let's make sure we look out for each other, help our neighbors, help the elderly, and support our local businesses during these troubled times. We'll all get through this and be sure to practice good hygiene and flatten the curve. For Ripley 304 Podcast, this is John McGinley signing off.